Hello and welcome to the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast, where we cover everything in the Boston sports world. My name is James Brady, and alongside me, closer to me than in Europe, not that close though, my brother Nicholas. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Today is a Monday, January 13th, and this is episode 41. James, can I get some intro music?
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup. He's in! Patriots win the Super Bowl! Brady has his fifth!
Now it's time to add to your resume. NBA champion, how does that sound?
Anything possible!
All right, we'll hop into it right away here with the Red Sox, who made some moves in the past week. James, if you want to take us through those.
Yeah, so the Red Sox have been doing their part before the arbitration deadline, which I believe now has passed. But they avoided arbitration with a lot of big names, including Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., Heath Hembree, Matt Barnes, and a couple others. Mookie Betts being the headliner, signing a one-year $27 million contract with the Red Sox, which became the highest of any arbitration-eligible player in MLB history, beating Nolan Arenado's previous record of, I believe, $26 million. So we get Mookie for another year at the expense of $27 million.
See, I don't know that we do, though, because, you know, we've been riding this thing where the Red Sox want to be under the luxury tax, and then they go out and pay both. It was like a question whether they're going to pay both JD and Mookie or just pay one of them. Now they've paid them both. The big dollars is literally Mookie setting a record with this one-year deal. There is the chance they could deal him away, like in a trade-type scenario. So it's not a guarantee that I think he'll be with the team. As much as I want to see him with the team, I think there's a pretty good chance. Not a pretty good chance. There's a chance that this is all in lieu of trading him.
I guess the same goes for Jackie Bradley as well. That was the big talk is like, if you do sign Mookie and JD, do you get rid of Jackie Bradley? Because that's $11 million alone right there. Or do you get rid of Mookie to keep Jackie Bradley, whatever it ends up being. But we got them both for now, and I'm pretty happy with that. So we got Jackie Bradley, like I said, for $11 million. A couple other names here. Brandon Workman we got for $3.5 million. Matt Barnes, $3.1 million. Heath Hembree, $1.6 million. And then the two players that we didn't reach a deal with were Andrew Benintendi and Eduardo Rodriguez. The Red Sox did offer them both deals. I think Benintendi's was somewhere in like the $3.5 million range. And I forget what Rodriguez's deal was, but basically with Benintendi, the Red Sox and Benintendi's, you know, his behalf, his, what is it called? God, the agent.
There you go.
Benintendi's agent. Their numbers were apart by like $750,000 to $1 million, where Eduardo Rodriguez, his agent, and then the Red Sox offer, they were pretty close, but just not matching. So I don't really know where it goes from here. I think they just go through arbitration, and that probably just means if the Red Sox want them, they'll have to pay more money.
Yeah, I mean, both guys, I think we should try to get back. Benintendi especially, coming up with some huge plays over the last couple of years. Other names still out there, my favorite current slash Pat, well, I guess he's not a current Red Sox, Brock Holt. No news there. So we are still waiting. It looks like there's some trade news kind of heating up now. I've seen a couple of occasions in the last couple of days with some bigger names, particularly out in the West. But closer to home here with the Red Sox, so far so good in my eyes in, you know, signing back people.
Yeah, I am glad with who we've been able to retain. And I you mentioned Benintendi, but as well, Eduardo Rodriguez, I mean, he was the leading pitcher for us last year. I think he, did he get 20 wins? If he didn't get 20, he got 19. But so, I mean, leading pitcher for us with David Price and Chris Sale both doing a lot of time on the injured lists. But he was a solid, solid pitcher this season, and I'd really like to see him come back. And I think their offers being so close, arbitration, if it so happens that Eduardo Rodriguez is seen as worth a lot more, I think that's when you get into, do they bring him back, do they not? But if he's right around where his agent said he's worth, I think the Red Sox will reach a deal.
Yeah, and that'd be great moving forward. I think the biggest the biggest thing this year was kind of our pitching, like you said, with David Price and Chris Sale spending so much time on the injured list. Eduardo Rodriguez really stepped up in a big way, and I think if we can lock down a guy like that and, you know, continue to improve our rotation and bullpen, things are looking good for 2020.
Yeah, I'm excited. 2019 was a rough season for this team, but it just makes me excited moving forward. And each time we record this, we're a little bit closer to spring training, getting back in the swing of baseball. And once you're there, I mean, it's 162 games. There's a lot of baseball to be played, and obviously there's still a lot of time to come before that. But I am just getting excited, you know, seeing kind of this team come together. We know who we're going to get back. We have some ideas for who's leaving, who's coming back, all that kind of stuff. All sorting out now, so hopefully we figure that out pretty soon. All right, what's up, guys? It is James from the podcast. I'm coming to you as I'm editing this, and between when we recorded the episode earlier today, it is now, it's still Monday, January 13th, but it is now 6:41 p.m. as I'm editing. We recorded around 11 a.m., and between then and now, there's been basically some breaking news with respect to the Astros stealing sign, that whole deal that went down. So both the Astros manager AJ Hinch and the general manager Jeff Lunau were suspended without pay for one season following the league's finished investigation of the cheating scheme. All this being brought to you by a CNN article, by the way. So if you want to look it up, just look up Astros cheating or Astros fire manager, something like that. You'll find it pretty easily. The suspensions are for the next following year, and they would have lasted through the 2020 World Series, but the Astros fired both the manager and general manager after finding this information out. So both of those two are gone from the Astros, and in basically the list of punishments are both of them suspended 1 year without pay. The team forfeits its first and second round selections for 2020 and 2021 drafts, and they have to pay a $5 million fine. And I'm not only bringing this to you because it's breaking news, because it also has really big implications on the Red Sox, who also got accused and basically discovered to be stealing signs in the 2018 regular season. So what does this mean for the Red Sox? So probably what we're going to see, if I had to guess, and I don't want to say anything definite because nothing's happened, and we'll definitely update you in the next episode what has happened, but if I had to guess, Cora gets suspended, and Cora probably gets fired by the Red Sox. If I had to guess, I personally don't want to see that happen. I really like Alex Cora as a manager, but given how this went down, I'm guessing the league has to rule just about the same on the Red Sox as they did on the Astros. So Cora probably looking like he's out of a job in Boston. I don't really know who will fill his place, but yeah, that's going to do it for this little breaking news update style thing. Hopefully not a lot of these in the future, but I just thought it was so important to throw it in while I'm editing this. So back to the rest of the podcast.
That pretty much wraps up the Red Sox. We will keep the ball rolling into the Celtics, who are currently sitting at 26-11, still second in the East. Now a little bit farther back, seven games behind Milwaukee. Jason Tatum having an incredible night the other night against the New Orleans Pelicans, where the Celtics put up 140 points. Tatum drops a career high 41. Going 16 for 22 from the field and 6 for 9 from 3. I haven't really gotten a chance to watch much. I watched a little bit of the New Orleans game, but I was flipping between that and the Bruins, so I didn't see a whole lot. But Kemba Walker's back. His absence was missed for a couple of games with, I believe it was an illness. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right.
Illness? Okay. So good to have him back. And then Jason Tatum adding to his resume this year that he is, in fact, a very good basketball player.
Yeah. Like you said, just showing, I mean, what is he, in his third year now?
Yeah.
He's still crazy young, but this just shows his talent. And it's crazy because he's had a couple of big, like, 30-something point performances, and I've always wondered, oh, is that his career high? Is that his career high? But finally, breaking the 40 mark, 41 points, and just a dominant performance against the Pelicans. Incredible selection on his shooting. Only missing 8 shots, going above 500 from 3. I mean, it's what you want to see. And obviously, that's on an ideal night against a bad basketball team. But I think this just kind of speaks to the talent ceiling that Jason Tatum has and how high that ceiling can go.
Yeah, and I don't think we've reached it. And I mean,
we're remotely close.
You did mention, you know, New Orleans not having the best season with, you know, the big name Zion still sitting out for who knows what reason. I'm just kidding. He was injured. But at the very least, huge confidence boost for Jason Tatum here.
Yeah.
And he's got to have his sights set on 50 now, right?
I mean, that's the next big milestone. But I think if he can even contribute, like this shooting, even if he ends up scoring 20, just the efficiency of this shooting is incredible and something that, like, he didn't wait. Like, you see some of these guys, like Harden, who will go 15 for 40 and drop a bunch of points, but it's all those misses that someone else could have had the ball, someone else could have put the ball in kind of thing, where you see missing 8 shots all night. There wasn't a lot of times where he took a scoring opportunity away from someone else.
He only missed 6 shots all night, by the way. Good math, though.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Now, this is kind of like a side thing. This is my own, like, I don't want to say beef because I use the word in here, but grudge, I guess. So recently, just before the Pelicans game, the Celtics lost to the Philadelphia 76ers, a, you know, pretty close rival there, being in the same division and everything. And the 76ers thought it would be a good idea to kind of take to Twitter and celebrate and kind of call us out. I forget the exact tweet, and I don't have it up here, but it was basically like, I think it was a little bit above, and I think you disagree with me here, James. I think it was a little bit above of like, we beat you type of bragging. I think it was kind of like taking it to the next level, like, hey, look what we did, directly calling people out. And I did read through the comments, and there were a lot of Boston fans kind of commenting back. Did you see the tweet I'm talking about? I think you did, because we talked about it, kind of.
I mean, there's this one from 4 days ago that's just, you good at Celtics?
Yeah, that's the one.
Team clinches season series versus Boston.
Yeah, which, I mean, I really don't understand the whole clinching a season series thing. I get playoffs, maybe a different matter, and it just seems like a lot of talk for a mid-season game.
Yeah, no, I think beef might be the right word. I'm scrolling through responses here, and they are incredible. So the first one, I'll just go through two here. The first one being a 76ers Boston Celtics all-time head-to-head regular season game log.
And I did see that.
They've played 451 games against each other. Philadelphia's won 190, Boston's won 261. And whoever responded must be a Sixers fan, because it's a tweet of a picture that says, Sonic says, stay on your own team's Twitter account, you f***ing loser.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Man, that made me very happy, despite it being directed at us. But
all right, so I wasn't mad at this. I get, like, talking on Twitter.
No, you were mad. You were mad.
Okay, I was a little mad. I got even more mad the next day when, like, they talked this talk, basically, and I lost out on, like, a 50-cent parlay to win $15. When the 76ers lost to the Mavericks. So I was pretty upset that they would, you know, call us out on Twitter and then go proceed to lose to the Mavericks. I wasn't very happy. 76ers, you're the reason I missed out on a pretty decent payout, so screw you.
Was that the only thing that missed? Was?
Yep, I had the Lakers, who were a huge underdog because both LeBron and Anthony Davis were out. I had the Celtics beating the whoever they played that night, and I literally just closed the window that had it open. And then I believe I had the Heat over the Pacers or something like that.
I was going to say, that's a lot to turn 50 cents into $15, but wow.
Because the 76ers and the Lakers were both the underdogs there, so that gave me pretty good odds.
Interesting.
Clearly the 76ers were underdogs because they lost by like 20 points.
Yeah, they got kind of trashed on. Well, welcome back to Nicholas's Losing Gambling Corner. Maybe one
day. Guys, I'm thinking next NFL season when I have money.
Well, if you continue at this rate, you won't have any, so that will never happen.
It's true.
Yeah, sorry, James. I sold the show for more gambling money. My bad.
Yeah, I was able to place a $1 bet.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. We're worth more than a dollar. Probably like $1.50.
Somewhere in there.
All right, that pretty much wraps up the Celtics. Before we get into the Bruins here, a quick word from our sponsor.
And welcome back to the other half of the TD Garden. We're talking about the Boston Bruins, who recently won an overtime game. Yes, let's go. They beat the New York Islanders.
I thought you were going to say New Orleans there.
Me too. And are currently on a 3-game win streak heading into Philadelphia tonight. That game I'm very excited for. But, I mean, the Bruins played some really good hockey in the last couple of days, coming off a couple of game losing streak. But, I mean, the biggest thing, despite whatever opponents we have beaten recently, who I'm going to check really quick, have been the Nashville Predators, the Winnipeg Jets in a close one, and the Islanders. But, I mean, it's got to be the overtime win that stands out, because the Bruins haven't done that.
I'm actually going to disagree with you here. Now, I don't have the standings up or anything. I guess I could pull those up pretty easily, as I'm about to do now. But the win that sticks out to me is the one that started this 3-game win streak, and that is the win over pardon me as I stumble through this, over the Nashville Predators. And I somehow cannot find the standings. This is going to be loud for a second. I apologize.
I mean, what, that's 6-2 victory over Nashville. I believe that's Pastrnak has a hat trick, I think. No. Yeah, that was against the Jets. I think that was against the Jets. Shoot. Now I don't know.
Okay.
This show is terrible.
The point I'm getting at is, you know, Nashville, not a great team this year, sitting at about 20th in the league. Not about, at 20th in the league. But that game was just so dominant. And the Bruins, really, Nashville was only in it for a little bit at the end when they scored a goal to cut the lead to 2 goals with a little bit left in the third period. The Bruins quickly scoring a goal right after that to completely shut the door, and even adding one in the last minute or 30 seconds, I think, to cap off what was actually the beginning of the mom's trip, I guess. So a lot of the players' moms were on hand, so that was super special. But that's the game to me that sticks out, the kind that started this little roll that they're on currently, and just how dominant a performance that was.
Yeah, and to previously correct myself, it was during the Winnipeg Jets game that Pastrnak scored his hat trick. But I mean, Pastrnak now sitting at 35 goals, still leading the NHL, 65 points. I mean, he just continues to play at such a level.
And this is when I was watching it was either, I can't remember now if it was the Islanders broadcast or the Winnipeg. I think it was the Winnipeg. One of the Bruins commentators said this, and it really stuck with me. The puck seems to just find David Pastrnak. I think it's a combination of he got some really good bounces in that game, and that what the announcer said after, you know, a really good bounce that happened to fall to Pastrnak for a shot. His teammates know what a tear he's on. He's the guy they're looking for on power play. He's the guy they're looking to get on that breakaway. Like, he's just played so well that his teammates and his team are recognizing that, and they're just going to let him keep scoring. I think the next closest person for goals on the Bruins is Brad Marchand. I think he has 20-something.
Jeez.
I can double-check that, but Pastrnak is the go-to guy for this Bruins team.
Yeah, and speaking of power play goals, the Bruins setting a, I believe, team
franchise record.
Yeah, franchise record with 13 straight games with a power play goal. And that just speaks to, you give the Bruins that advantage and they capitalize on it. They don't look back, and just incredible scoring. I mean, 13 games, that's crazy to think every single night a power play goal for 13 games. That's really, really crazy. And going back to quickly going to talk about, you said the puck seems to find Pastrnak, and it really does. I mean, he just seems to be in the right place. I don't know if it's in the right place at the right time. It's going to be skill at this point. Like, you can get lucky on a couple of those, but you can't score 35 goals like he has just being lucky every single time.
No.
And going back to the Jets game, this kind of ties into like the overtime and shootout struggles that the Bruins have had. There was one play where Jake DeBrusk gets the puck across the blue line, and the puck is just rolling on its edge instead of being flat on the ice. He manages to knock it down flat the last second and get the puck in, but I'm just thinking back to all of the shootouts. I'm like, well, no way this is going, and no way Bruins score a one-on-one goal. It just doesn't happen, but surprisingly,
it was a beautiful goal.
It did. It was a great goal. DeBrusk netting 2, Pastrnak with 3. I mean, it was just a great, close game, very exciting. But I mean, yeah, it continues for me that the Bruins are just so much fun to watch. I try to watch them whenever I can. I've started doing this new thing now where I'll pull up the Celtics live stream on one screen if they're playing on the same night, and then the Bruins on the other, and I will just sit here and watch both games at the same time. It's so much fun watching these two teams in the TD Garden, and just the great seasons they're both having.
Going back to what I was saying previously, Marchand, the second leading scorer on the Bruins with 20 goals. So Pastrnak, 15 goals ahead of Marchand, almost doubling what any other Bruin has, or what most Bruins have, to be honest. But, you know, Marchand's still up there in points. He has 42 assists this year, putting him at 62 points just behind David Pastrnak. So these two really leading the way for this Bruins team. And there was one more thing I think I wanted to touch on. Oh, you already mentioned it, going to Philadelphia tonight and then a back-to-back with the Blue Jacket tomorrow.
Busy week this week with, you said, Philadelphia tonight, Columbus tomorrow, Pittsburgh on Thursday, couple days off, and then Pittsburgh again on Sunday. So one of those
Pittsburgh's currently sitting at 4th in the league, behind the Bruins, the Blues, and the Washington are all tied with 65 points. I don't know what type of tiebreaker we have to be at first, but we're in first.
Oh, okay. Very.
I'll tell you, it is an arch shootout win.
No, it certainly is not.
Although the Blues are also 0-3.
Moving on from the Bruins to the Patriots, having just a Patriots offseason is what I'm going to call it at this point. Julian Edelman got in some trouble. So he was recently arrested for jumping on the windshield of someone's car while on a bit of a bender under the influence of alcohol, allegedly, in Beverly Hills, got into an altercation, stood on a dude's windshield, and just jumped on it. So he got arrested. I mean,
Did he break it?
I imagine he did.
Dude, he was partying with Amendola and Paul Pierce.
Oh, what a great gang.
And this article says is, this is the ESPN article, jumped on the hood of a vehicle on Saturday at approximately 9 p.m. So it was pretty early in the night.
Early on, yeah.
In a statement, police said that Edelman is scheduled to appear at Airport Courthouse on April 13th.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, it's fine. We can pay our way out of this one. But I forget where it said. It was this Boston, I think it was a Twitter account, was commenting on how impressive it was that he was jumping on a car windshield considering all the injuries he had this season, like with his knees.
Oh god!
It was like, oh, he's been arrested, but hey, his knees must be feeling better. Something was really dumb, but yeah.
Do we know what type of car it was?
I think it was either like a Mercedes Benz or a BMW. I mean, it was something nice. They're in Beverly Hills. It's not going to be.
It wasn't my 2004 Toyota Corolla.
No, with roll crank down windows.
Crank down windows. You know what it is.
But yeah, so I'm going to say this. By far, like, one of the smallest blunders in the Patriots offseason we've had recently. So, we can take this between.
I mean, if we got through the Hernandez thing, we can get
Tuggate, murder, destroying cell phones. It hasn't been a good look for the Patriots during the offseason. But, I mean, Edelman being arrested on a destruction of property violation, not that bad.
Moving on from the Patriots offseason blunders. We are into, I'm just going through, I don't care that you cut me off three times in a row. Moving on to the AFC and NFC championship game. Football did go on, believe it or not. I can't actually believe it without the Patriots in, what is this, semifinal weekend, I guess? No, quarterfinal weekend?
Quarterfinal.
I don't know.
They don't really call it
anything. There was football this weekend, that's what I'm trying to get at. The championship games are set for the AFC and NFC. AFC featuring the Titans, huge underdogs versus the Baltimore Ravens. Somehow pulling off Derrick Henry. I'm pretty sure his legs are so big from literally stacking the entire Titans team on his back. Playing the Chiefs, who quite a comeback game yesterday versus the Houston Texans. Don't know how you choked that one away, Bill O'Brien. And then the NFC Championship featuring the Packers with, I'm going to say, a little or a lot of help from the refs versus the San Francisco 49ers with, you know, a pretty dominant performance over the Vikings.
But I do have an answer for you on, you don't know how Bill O'Brien choked that one away. The simple answer is because it's Bill O'Brien. The only comfort as a Houston fan that comes out of this is you can hope that Bill O'Brien gets fired. I mean, he just can't get it done in Houston. Houston was up 24-0 with seemingly gift after gift on special teams. But note here, both of the special teams plays made were both by former Patriots, Barcavius Mingo, as well as someone Crossen. I forget what his name is, but both of them were former Patriots, so Patriots special teams does it different. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, so they go up 24-0, and then they managed to choke that lead in the first half. End of the half.
In the second quarter alone.
Yeah, so they enter the half down, the Texans, that is, down 24-28. You think, okay, they can come back. The Chiefs just keep going and end up scoring 41 unanswered. So it ends up 41-24 before the Houston Texans score another point.
Well, the game ended 41-34, correct?
51-31.
51-31, I see. So the Houston
just Texans. Just a shootout. It just looked like the second Kansas City started coming back, that was game.
So I don't know the exact numbers to this, but the four touchdowns in the second were scored in something like 7 minutes, I think.
Oh, it was 7 minutes. It was like a three and out, probably an interception or fumble on like the Texans' behalf. It was terrible. It was bad football.
So I think the four touchdowns by the Chiefs were, like I said, scored in something like 7 minutes of game clock, maybe even less. And then that fifth touchdown coming just after halftime, that made for 5 touchdowns in just over 12 minutes of game time. So the Chiefs putting on an absolute clinic after the first quarter against these Houston Texans. I mean, they get to play in another AFC Championship game in Arrowhead.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you look for. For a good second, I thought we were going to see the Titans and Houston, which were just the two most unlikely teams to end up here. Going back from the Titans game, I mean, all credit to the Titans for just dominating the Ravens and making them look bad. You have to talk about a little bit Lamar Jackson. He's the best. He's so good. And I mean, he looked like Lamar Jackson last year in the playoffs. Couldn't do anything. 3 turnovers for the Ravens, and they just couldn't get anything done. Barely scored a touchdown towards garbage time when this game was basically already on ice. The Titans moving on to the AFC Championship. We get one game closer to Mike Vrabel being a little bit less
of a man.
Yeah, we'll put it that way. A little bit less of a man.
The other plus side to the Chiefs making it to an AFC Championship game again is they're just a higher percent chance that we see an absolute all-time Andy Reid mishap moment. So we have that to look forward to next weekend. Do we want to talk about the Packers? And I don't want to call it luck at this point because, I mean, it's happened more than 4 or 5 times this year.
Yeah, it's just getting ridiculous how the Packers seemingly get bailed out by the refs every single time. And I'm not going to speak on it a lot because if you look back historically, every single person here listening to this, if there's anyone left, could just fire back at us a million times the Patriots have been saved by the refs. But
tough rule.
It's getting ridiculous at this point where you look at, like you said, 4 or 5 games that have been decided basically by the refs for the Packers.
And that's the Packers alone. There have been, I want to say, dozens this year decided by the refs, which is...
Oh, for sure.
And not like 100%. Like, you know what we're getting at. Like, heavily influenced by calls or missed calls or no calls.
Yeah.
By the refs. I mean, Patriots included, therefore.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad.
Just to give some perspective, I guess. The play we're referring to is a first down that was, I mean, if you see the picture in the first down line and where he was actually, his knee was down, very clearly not a first down. That was called a first down, which allowed the Packers to run the rest of the clock out for the game, correct?
Oh, I have no clue. I didn't even bother watch.
I believe it was a case of, like, they were up a touchdown.
I mean, yeah.
What was the final score of that game?
It was like 28-21 or something.
Yeah, so they were up a touchdown, and I believe it was that situation, like, you need a first down
basically
to
ice
run out
the game,
clock.
Yeah,
and I think that's how they got it. So, I mean, say what you will, that's no guarantee the Seahawks would have gone down and scored. There's no guarantee they wouldn't have gone forth, or I don't even know what down it was. But just, you know, it sucks when you have teams like this in some of the biggest games of the year so far, with the exception of coming up the championship games and the Super Bowl, that are decided by calls like that.
Yeah, I mean, it just speaks to the fact that, like, something needs to get figured out with the reffing because they've done a lot to readjust it over the last offseason. They're supposed to do all this thing to make stuff better, and it really hasn't. The whole big deal going into this was pass interference. That didn't really get cleaned up. You're still seeing a lot of pass interference where, you can challenge it now, and it still rarely gets overturned. And it's just, we've talked about this at length in other Patriots episodes or other episodes in general about the Patriots, so we're not going to go into it too much, but basically how stuff is called, where, like, with the N'Keal Harry play, had they called that a touchdown, go back, you can just overturn it, whatever, but because of the way it was called, you can't review it. Same thing with, like, a couple of other plays. Because of how it's called, you can or can't review it because the ball's blown dead. You can't, you know, give them the touchdown or whatever they're going to get if you didn't blow it dead. So it's a lot of stuff that still needs to be refined and I'm hoping is addressed this offseason because it's just getting ridiculous at this point.
That's enough about the refs because it just sucks that even has to be part of the conversation. Moving on from, you know, the refs and everything, which we've talked at length and now this episode and many other previous episodes, let's kind of break down the championship games a little bit. My first question would be kind of the Titans and Chiefs, both two teams that are absolutely rolling. I mean, the Titans rolling for 2 games, the Chiefs only having played 1 game in the last couple of weeks, but still a dominant offensive performance nonetheless. Is there any way the Titans, you know, pull off this upset?
I mean, the Titans have taken down the number 1 seed in the AFC with the Baltimore Ravens, so as well as taking down our favorite team, the Patriots. So at this point, I can't say that the Titans don't have a chance. They've played incredibly. They've found a way to beat the Patriots in a tough game. They found a way to just shut down what everyone considered to be, you know, the guaranteed win for the Super Bowl. There's no way to stop the Ravens. They got stopped, and I could not be happier about how that game turned out. But you have Andy Reid. He doesn't have his extra week to prepare. He's historically really good coming off of the bye week, coming off of, you know, the extra week of rest that comes with being a top two seed. And I think the Titans have a chance in this game. They can get completely blown out, and that wouldn't surprise me either because they barely snuck into the playoffs in the first place. But at this point, I just, you can't count them out.
All right, I'm not going to lie there. You cut out again for a reason, so I didn't hear half of that. I'm just going to assume you said both teams have a pretty good chance. Like you said, the Titans have played incredibly, taken down probably the, well, top three teams, two of the top three teams in the AFC. But the Chiefs, I mean, after a performance like yesterday and just the offensive power, I don't know that, like, if it comes down to that, I don't know that the Titans can match them.
No, if you look back, Ryan Tannehill in his last two games has had, like, 100 passing yards or less. It's been all on the ground. So, yeah, I think if you get into a shootout, you got to take the Chiefs 9 out of 10 times. But if you allow the Titans to play their game and figure out their defense, which is tough against such a dynamic team with Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, their running game isn't great on the Chiefs' part, but they have a couple of other really speedy receivers who you can't double cover everyone. So when it comes down to it, I mean, I think, like I said, both teams have a good chance, but it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out.
I think, you know, if you're the Titans, you hope for maybe an early mistake, some sort of mistake by Patrick Mahomes or a receiver. You get an interception, a lucky fumble, block a punt, something like that. I think that, you know, that could swing the scale in favor of the Titans. But it could just come down to, I guess, what do they play on Sunday? Must be on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
Or Saturday. Are there Sunday. Any more Saturday games?
Nope, just Sunday.
Okay, Sunday. So we can talk all we want, but results will come on Sunday. In the NFC, I don't know about you. I'm definitely taking the 49ers here. I don't see any way the Packers get it done.
Well, no, I see a number of ways the Packers get it done, and they all wear white and black striped jerseys. But the 49ers, if anything, I now want them to win. I don't particularly like the Packers. I don't believe in this whole Aaron Rodgers legacy. I don't think he's as good as people make him out to be. I got to take the 49ers. They're incredible. They have so many weapons on offense, a great defense that I think if you start hitting Rodgers, getting him under pressure, he's going to get real angry and kind of, you know, frustrated and bothered. And you see, that's what the Patriots have done in the past to other teams, where if you keep hitting that quarterback, it's hard for them to get mentally back into the game. So I think with this just Niners dominant defense with Nick Bosa, some other great guys, I believe Dee Ford's also on that team. I think if you get to Rodgers, you have a really good chance. You know, Packers, you have a good run game with Aaron Jones, who's just been incredible. They kind of lack some of the weapons on offense at the receiving positions, despite the fact that, what's his name, just went
Devontae
off
Adams.
Devontae Adams went incredible off last night.
He's been going off all season. I've had him on my fantasy team. He's really slept on. But as far as I know, he's the only receiver on that.
Yeah. But no, I do think the 49ers have a great chance. And going quickly back to the Titans-Chiefs games, I think if you're the Tennessee Titans, you got nothing to lose. You made it this far.
No, absolutely.
You made an incredible run, and if you keep winning, that's great. But if you lose here, I mean, like, look at what you've done. You took down, like you said, two of the top three teams, and you made a really good go for it with Ryan Tannehill.
Especially if it's any sort of football game. If they absolutely get blown out and destroyed, you're kind of like, ah, well, all right. But if they give it to the Chiefs and it's a close game, you got to be happy with that season as the Tennessee Titans. It came down to the last week to make the playoffs for them. So, like you said, no, I don't think anything lost on their point unless it's an absolute slaughter fest.
Yeah, and I think this would become quickly one of the funniest narratives, among other reasons, with the Titans team winning the Super Bowl. But if Ryan Tannehill wins this game, the Super Bowl is in Miami, where he has spent the rest of his career. So this becomes a homecoming for him if they make it to the Super Bowl.
I think we have talked at great length now about the NFL and teams that we, you know, particularly don't care about.
Not at all. I don't care about any of these teams. Will I even watch the Super Bowl? I mean, yeah, I'll watch the Super Bowl, but like, I don't care.
I'll probably bet on the Super Bowl. It's fine.
Well, you'll probably lose money on the Super Bowl is what that means. Probably. If I rephrased it. Anyways.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. Please leave some sort of feedback. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know that you like the show and that you don't like the show. We don't really care. Thanks for sticking with us for so long. We're trying to get back over here, get on a regular schedule. We'll see if that happens. Probably not if I had to guess. James, you want to give us the social medias?
All right. So I'm going to quickly reiterate what you said. Leave a rating, leave a like, leave a comment, something so we can see that you watch this episode. Tell your friends. And also follow us on social medias, Instagram at Brady Bros Boston, YouTube Brady Bros. We just uploaded on there actually this morning as we're recording this, so you guys probably hear this tomorrow, but we uploaded a video. Go watch it. Go drop a comment. Let us know that you came from the podcast. On Twitter, follow you at Brady Bros Nick. Follow me at James_B_Boston. We do a lot of tweeting. We keep up. I always tweet out when videos come out, when the podcast comes out, and then reminders.
Follow James on Twitter. He actually tweets stuff. I usually just like and retweet stuff. So if you want to see some recycled content, follow me too.
Yeah, so that's going to do it for this episode of the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast. We will see you all hopefully next week around the same time as this one coming out. We're doing our best to get back on schedule. We think we have some idea of when recording works and stuff, so it's more consistent. We can guarantee you that we're coming at you on the same time day, but with school and everything's crazy, so you got to keep in mind we do the best we can. Anyways, that's gonna do it for this episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you all next week.
See ya.